Welcome to the EANIS Network podcast series. EANIS stands for the European Network on International Student Mobility that aims to connect research and practice. Enjoy our podcast and get to know the latest news on international student mobility.
Welcome everyone. This is Anita Kiri speaking from the University of Szeged, Hungary. And we are kicking off the EANIS podcast series with the first guest, Christoph van Mol, Action Chair at the EANIS Network and Assistant Professor at the Tilburg University in the Netherlands. Welcome, Christoph.
Thank you for the invitation, of course.
Well, I would like to start this conversation with the question of where did the idea of the EANIS Network come from?
Well, actually, it's an idea that kind of grew over several years' time, I think. Maybe even when I was doing my PhD already, there were not so many scholars involved in international student mobility yet. But what I discovered throughout my career was that many researchers working on international student mobility would be working kind of isolated. And so you would have people working in Norway, like Janneke Wiers Jensen, for example, the leader of Working Group 4. You would have people working in Italy, for example, in Germany. But there would be very little connection between all these researchers. And then what I also discovered was that many PhD students who started their PhD on international student mobility, they did not really have supervisors or people in the department that were really interested in the subject of international student mobility. So they would have supervisors who did something completely differently, and they would feel a little bit lost. And so in that sense, I always discovered that at conferences, when we would organize sessions on international student mobility, that many young researchers in particular, but also older researchers, would be very happy, like, finally we meet people who are interested in the same subject, who really know what I'm talking about and who are really interested, and that would give them like a great boost to continue their work. But so I discovered there were these little islands, that there was a need for more connection, more exchange, also to really substantively advance the field, because many people would do the same thing, just in different contexts. Whereas we could learn quite a lot from each other, we could support each other, and that did not really happen. And then talking to many people, like, for example, also Nikolai Netz, the vice chair of the network, I also discovered that people shared this observation. And so with Nico, we have been talking for several years on, okay, we should do something, we should start a network to connect these researchers. But of course, it's always a question of agendas and finding time to really do so. But then in the last years, there was this extra development. So I worked together with Anthony Ogden and Bernard Streitwiese, two scholars who are based in the United States. And we started editing a book which aimed to bring together all findings on international student exchanges across the world in 14 key areas of research that we identified, with the idea of translating these research results into practical recommendations for academic organizations, international offices, stakeholders, because we observed that actually that was something that did not exist yet, but however, which would be very important in order to have internationalization strategies or strategies on international student mobility and strategic plans to be based on empirical evidence by researchers. So we wanted to start a conversation between researchers and practitioners. And the book was really a great success. Once we start to contact the practitioners, because we involved practitioners in each chapter as well, together with academics, people were very enthusiastic. And we put people together for each chapter that did not really know each other. So we really said, like, okay, chapter on, let's say, employment outcomes. Then we connected Janneke Wiers Jensen, from the leader of Working Group 4, with people in the United States, researchers and practitioners, and we said, okay, you write a chapter together. And that led to all kind of interesting conversations, discoveries about data sets that practitioners would have that could be useful for research. Also, insights from researchers that practitioners were not aware of. And so through that process, I also discovered that actually, despite the fact that we all do research on a subject that is very important for many people working daily practice in these international offices or academic organizations, there was very little conversation. And they did not know our work. And we would also not know the work that they were doing. And so I more actively also start to connect to practitioners, for example, also people from the Erasmus Student Network. And then we start some collaborations which were really fruitful in the sense that very often, for example, they would lack the methodological expertise to set up certain experiments or surveys on international student mobility. We would help with them and they would have information that they could use to improve practice. And we would have data also that we could analyze for very interesting scientific questions to solve. So throughout the years, we discovered basically that there was that there would be quite some mutual benefits for both researchers and practitioners if we would really engage in a thorough conversation. And then interestingly, we decided in 2019, I think it was, or 2018, Nico and I, we said like, okay, let's do it. Let's apply for a cost action. And so we start to scope some initial interest among people that we knew. And then suddenly some people indicated, hey, but you know, Mette Ginnerskov-Dahlberg, who is the leader of Working Group 2 right now, and Thais Franca, who is the grant manager of the network, they're also, they contacted us already because they want to establish a research network on international student mobility through applying for a cost action. So that was really a simultaneous development, which was very nice. And then we connected and we said, why would we submit two different proposals? Because we want to do the same. And then we just joined forces, which led to quite some synergies. And that's how the network also came into being, from an idea to really the network.
Wow, this seems like an amazing development of a professional research network. I believe lots of practitioners and also researchers appreciate on many different levels. You started mentioning that you chose the COST action as being part of the research network. Why exactly this framework? Because I know that there are several different frameworks for research networks, but why exactly COST action? Why did you choose this framework?
Well, because they are a very, very nice organization in the sense that what they do is they provide funding for people who have innovative bottom-up ideas. So there's no prescribed kind of team that they say, okay, we want a network on, I don't know, climate change or environmental issues. Nowadays, they really start from the idea. Researchers themselves, they know what is needed. And so you're free to come up with whatever subject that you think is innovative and really needs people to connect to improve our scientific knowledge on the subject. Furthermore, COST actions are also really interested in making that connection and that bridge between research and practice. So they really actively encourage also people in COST actions to connect to policy circles, for example, to stakeholders, to really make an impact also on society. And so as they also have generous funding, that was kind of the ideal funding platform to submit an application to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. So we already mentioned like this networks organization started years back. And instead of talking about how it got organized, because I think it was kind of an organic process, how did the network grow, or how has it grown in the past years, or how is it growing now?
Oh, it's growing tremendously. Actually, it is growing much faster than we anticipated. So that was really a surprise for us. We knew that there were quite some people interested in the subject, of course, but we started out the proposal with about 50 persons, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. more or less, approximately. But now we are already over 200 members. So, and we only started in October. So that means in half a year time, we had about 150 persons joining the network, which
That's
is impressive. And still, applications keep on coming in. So it seems that we really hit a very important subject that many people have been waiting for a network to exist on.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And so do you need to reach out to these people, or do they find you and they apply to the network, even, you know, with, because of the dissemination or communication efforts, or they just find you and then they volunteer and then they apply?
I think it goes in different ways. So there is indeed some people who just find us and apply, but then there is also, of course, people's social networks. So they join the action, they indicate, hey, you were working on this as well, because that's the problem, right? As many people were working on these islands, we do not know everybody, but the more people that join, the more people can be reached on their isolated islands. And so I see a lot of people that write emails and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs., and then they say a name, they indicate that you have this interesting network. Can I join, and how can I join? So that's one part. Then you have, of mm-hmm. course, the social media, which we are very active upon as well. So people hear about the network on social media. And so I think it's both. It's really an active dissemination strategy of the action. It's really people within the action who are contacting other potential members that could be of interest to the action. And then finally, I think also in the future, the more activities that we start to organize, the more people will definitely join the action in the future as well. Like, for example, the webinars that are coming up over the next week. So we had one webinar yesterday, but we will have four webinars more before the summer. And I really think that they will also lead to an increase in the number of applications again.
That's amazing. Okay, and talking about future plans, what kind of events are coming up that might be interesting for the stakeholders or researchers and practitioners in the next few months, couple of months?
The first important events that will take place are for webinars. So there will be a webinar on employment outcomes of international student mobility at the end of April. There will also be a webinar on connecting research and practice, really. So the core idea of the network, which is anchored also in a specific working group 5, they also have a webinar at the end of April. Then we have a webinar on social inequalities in May. And then we have one on the integration of international students when they are abroad also in June. And then we will have a first flagship event, we could say, in October, 5-7 October. We will organize a conference in Tartu in the Estonian National Museum, where we really would like to hear from many scholars and practitioners across Europe and beyond. So we will launch this event as soon as possible so that people can apply to join us there and get to know more about the network.
Yes, these sound like amazing plans. And now that we're already in the process and the network is already live and active, what do you plan up until the end or even after the end of the whole INIS Coast Action? So what are the big aims up until the end or even beyond the end of this project?
Well, the really big aim, what we aim to achieve, is more cooperation between researchers involved in international student mobility so that we really significantly advance our understanding of international student mobility. So that really is one of the issues. If we have more collaborations, we lose less time and effort in doing extra data collections, for example, if they already exist elsewhere. That could also lead to joint applications for funding projects, so more research in the future. That's really one aim. And then the other one really is to establish a long-lasting relationship between researchers and practitioners. That really goes in both ways, that it is the practitioners who contact researchers within the network who say, well, we have these pressing questions. Can you help us to find out how we can solve them? As well as researchers contacting stakeholders and saying, well, could you help us out with, for example, working out the practical recommendations out of our research results? Because what very often happens is that scientists in their ivory tower, including myself, to be honest, that we submit to a journal and then the journal indicates, well, you need to formulate some practical or policy recommendations, and then we just invent them without really having an idea of the practicalities that exist when you're involved in daily practice, the barriers that exist to implement certain things. And so if we have a much more ongoing conversation between researchers and practitioners, we will also have many more synergies in that sense, so that the recommendations that we make will be more feasible for daily practice. But at the same time, there could be much more collaboration to solve issues that the daily practitioners are dealing with.
Yeah, I understand. And this is a very nice aim. And I think that if a network, then hopefully in this network will be able to reach this. And even now, it shows very promising results. So that's amazing. Yeah. And if now there are some listeners who would like to start other research groups, or who are thinking of something similar, maybe in the same topic, similar topics and different topics, what advice would you give to this research group if they want to start a new collaboration, maybe even under the Coast Action Initiative? What is a good advice for them that you would give?
Well, I think, first of all, there needs to be critical mass. I think that is important, that you have really a number of people that are interested in the same subject, that do believe also in the project, and that that really also want to create this together with you. Because what I really enjoyed is that, although I was the main applicant, that this proposal for COST was really developed by the four of us, Thais, Nico, Mette and myself. So that means that and we come from different fields, we come from different geographical areas in Europe, so that helps to make the proposal very complete. I also think it's important to start on time, so we developed this proposal over the course of, I think it was between 9 months and a year or so, so we took sufficient time to really think things through, really in detail, like how will the working groups work, what kind of responsibilities will everybody have, what kind of different positions do we want to have, how is everything complementing each other, matching. So I think really thinking through also the structure of the network would really be important, and also being open to diverging opinions and to new ideas, because once you really start to elaborate on such proposal and start to get input from different people, first of all, it's very encouraging because you see the enthusiasm, and that really makes you feel like, okay, this is a very noteworthy effort. We really need to get this through. But also it helps you to consider different perspectives and to get a very coherent proposal that kind of incorporates these different perspectives that always exist on whatever topic that you're studying.
Yeah, that's quite true. Okay. Well, thank you, Christoph, for being the INIS podcast's first guest and sharing your experience and thoughts on the network and more. And thank you all for tuning in. And if you're interested in other topics that are coming up in the next podcast, make sure that you're following the INIS Network on social media, and you also sign up for the newsletter. So thank you, Christoph.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the invitation again.
Thank you. You all have a lovely day and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast was powered by the European Union-founded Coast Association.